Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download and 30-day free trial at www.audibletrial.com/coldslither. Over 150,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. Once again, that's audibletrial.com/coldslither.
The following is a presentation of the Cold Slither Podcast Network.
Welcome to another exciting episode of the Clip Nation's Comic Book Chronicles.
Yay!
I am your host, Tim D-O-double-G.
Yay!
And I'm joined tonight by @PCN_dirt on Twitter.
Yay!
Oh, that's me. Yes, thank
you. He's there.
Maybe.
And the man behind the sound effects is @agent_70 on Twitter.
What's up, everybody?
And hopefully joining us later tonight after he's got his work out of the way is @RoddyCat on Twitter. I want to remind everyone to go to theclicknation.com. You can find previous episodes of the Comic Book Chronicles and Comic Book Reviews. Follow the Twitter account @TheClickNation. Like the Facebook fan page, facebook.com/TheClickNation. Subscribe to the YouTube channel, youtube.com/TheClickNation. Also subscribe on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. Make sure to thumb us up. I'll give 5-star reviews. Add us to your circles on Google Plus. Search for The Click Nation and join the The Click Nation community. We are a part of the Comic Related Podcasting Network and the Cold Slither Podcast Network. Go to coldslitterpodcast.com and check our show out and A Good and Terrible Show and Collards and Coffee, or I forget the exact name of the podcast, the Wrestlecast. There's a couple shows on there.
There's a bunch of shows now. We are part of a growing podcast family on the Cold Slither Podcast.
Yes, we are. And comicrelated.com for the Comic Related Podcasting Network. Remember, we record live every Thursday night, 9 p.m. Eastern Time. So just subscribe to youtube.com/TheClickNation, and you'll see the new episodes pop up. And last but not least, make sure to use the #ComicBookChronicles on your favorite social media websites. And if you ever have any feedback you want to have read on a future show, send that on over to theclicknation@gmail.com.
There you go.
Yeah. So, episode 101, starting off our second episode of the new year. We're going to be talking about first some cinematic news in the world of comic books. Gemma Atkinson reportedly up for the role of Supergirl in the Supergirl. Is it a CBS show, I believe?
Yes, she's a hot box of rocks.
Yeah, I saw her picture. I was like, okay. Channing Tatum's X-Men spinoff to hit theaters in 2016.
Oh, wait a second. Now, forgive me for being very, very skeptical as to how this is all going to turn out. But Channing Tatum as Gambit, really? Really?
That's the way it looks like it's going down.
like I said, just forgive me for being skeptical. It's just I can't really see this working very well. How about, what do you guys think?
It's a gambit. It doesn't matter.
I'll wait to see how it actually turns out.
What do you think is going to be more important, the look or the voice? You know, the accent.
Neither. Just if whether or not it's an actual good movie.
Okay.
What are they going to base it on?
I don't know. I don't know what villain he's going to have. I don't know. It's just a complete mystery.
And I wonder if Marvel actually let a Gambit book, you know, a Gambit movie launch and not have a book out to try to capitalize on it, even though it is from the other studio who they don't like.
Yeah.
Actually, they probably would if it's like the Fantastic, how they'll do the Fantastic Four.
Have Gambit go, oh, listen, right now Gambit's not in any of the main books because X-Factor's about to go away.
Yep. And the Fantastic Four sequel is also dated for 2016.
All right.
Actually, I'm not sure if that's correct or not, but I don't feel like clicking on the link to see. Because, yeah,
let's not talk about the Fantastic Four sequel. We haven't even seen, you know.
Yeah, it comes out next year, and they haven't released any footage for it.
Goodness.
Might be a reason why.
Mm-hmm.
The Arrow producer promises the Suicide Squad will return, and an actor teases Hive. What is Hive in the DC universe?
There's a queen, and she controls all of her little minions. And they all work for the queen. I don't know. She's telepathic, I believe.
I thought they were like a version of AIM. They were like a group of scientists, although I could be wrong. Or I might be thinking like pre-Crisis Hive. I'm not sure. That's how outdated my info is on Hive.
Because I made it a point a little while ago to try to get familiar with all the different abbreviated titles or groups in the DC universe, like Argus is their their form of S.H.I.E.L.D. And what's that group that that Frankenstein is with?
Shade?
Shade, yeah. Shade is like some supernatural group, right? I think.
Something like that.
And then Star Labs is...
Ray Palmer is like the chief scientist of Shade, and so it's part like Amethyst from Jim World and Frankenstein, but then it's also Ray Palmer, the Atom, creating all their crazy technology, and I don't know, they're a weird group. I don't know of a group that's really an analog form in the Marvel Universe.
Okay. And then there's Star Labs and now Hive. DC loves their
acronyms.
There you go.
The
Ant-Man trailer debuted tonight, or this week.
You mean the full teaser trailer?
Yes.
That's funny. I can't believe we have teasers to the teaser trailer for the full trailer. So what did you guys think?
That was fine. Didn't really show much.
It didn't really tell us much, but it did show us a few important things. It did tease, I think, a character eventually possibly becoming a Wasp, the Wasp. I thought the costume looked fine. I thought the effects for the ants looked fine. I think. My opinion of the trailer has become informed by this week's Ant-Man book. You know, and it's been, you know, I guess my opinion of the trailer has been kind of influenced by it.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I guess I'm seeing it in a slightly different light, and I see where they might be going with the movie and the direction they're going in. So it's kind of, changed my perspective on it. My very first viewing of the teaser trailer left me kind of, okay, that's, the effects are nice, but I don't know where they're going. So maybe I'm reading a little bit too much into it after reading this week's Ant-Man. But I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, they're hitting on a couple of the important movie points in the new book.
I will say I did enjoy the Ant-Man book, but we'll get to that later.
Got it.
It's possible Supergirl will cross over with Arrow and Flash.
Man, they're just going to try to make us, you know, watch these shows.
We mentioned that last week.
They're just trying.
Jeremy Renner returns.
Yeah, and it'll work, too.
Yeah, probably.
Jeremy Renner returns as Hawkeye in
a mystery project.
A.K.A. reshoots for Age of Ultron, more than likely.
You think so?
That's what I think it is. Reshoots, or maybe like shooting the after credit scene or something.
Right.
Everyone's so like,
he might be filming something for S.H.I.E.L.D.
That's what I was going to say.
That's what everyone thinks.
That's what I was going to say. He might be filming something for Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
I think there's a curveball somewhere. But we shall see. Deadpool movie eyes T.J. Miller and Ed Screen for mystery roles.
Okay.
Mark Margulis lands role as DC Comics Felix Faust on Constantine.
Okay.
Daredevil Netflix release date confirmed.
Yay! So you know those Netflix subscriptions are going to go up right before, because that's probably when I'm going to get mine.
Hey, just sign up the minute it comes out. Get your 30 days free. Let's see. I'm opening the slashfilm.com site to see exactly when it comes out.
April 10th, I think?
Yep, April 10th. I believe someone said that's a Friday. It's not something that Star Wars Clone Wars debuted on Friday, if I remember correctly.
Not sure. But what's funny about this is that just like House of Cards, every episode is going to be available that day.
Yeah, that's the Netflix model. That's how they do all of their original shows.
Right, and that I find, I mean, having not gotten into, you know, I don't subscribe to Netflix, so I'm not familiar with this model or having, I'm not familiar with experiencing this, so I'm kind of interested to give that a try and see how much of a binge I go on that first night or two, you know?
It's very easy where you go, oh, man, it's only 11:35. I got time. I can watch another one. And then you go, well, it's only 12:15. I mean, it's not that late. You can watch another one. Well, it's 12:45. It's not 1 o'clock yet. I can watch one more.
And then the next thing you know, it's 4 in the morning.
But you made your way through it.
Yeah, exactly.
Maybe 4 in the morning, but you're done.
Right. That's funny. Well, you know, we'll be sure to have, I think we'll be sure to have something to say about it on the show once that comes around. That'll be very interesting.
Uh-oh.
Fire!
Well, the fireplace is on. Obviously, it didn't like that.
That's funny.
Let's see. Spartacus's star Liam McIntyre cast as Flash villain Weather Wizard.
Wow, they're pulling out all the stops, putting that rogues gallery together, huh?
I think so. Take over reading the
fire
the news, and I'll be back.
No problem, I got it. So, Upper Deck teases a trading card set for Ant-Man, another set for Avengers: Age of Ultron. So, do people still collect these trading card sets for like comics and things? Do they sell at all at your store?
Sometimes, sure.
No
kidding.
I mean,
usually we'll buy one box, maybe two boxes. I mean, we don't go too crazy with them.
Right.
You'll have a bunch of people who will come in shortly after the movie comes out. Their kid wants some sort of collectible, so they'll buy them a pack of cards because it's cheap.
Gotcha.
But a lot of times we just sell them online, and it's usually to people in foreign countries.
No kidding.
They buy 3 or 4 packs and have them shipped over there.
Wow. I didn't realize that there was like a foreign market for movie trading card sets.
Yeah.
That's interesting. So, all right. It's funny that Tim requested that we start that we go over the news or that we take over the news at this juncture because I posted this particular story, and this is something that hit my Facebook feed, my Facebook wall this morning, and you know during lunch I plugged in Chris Evans and Betty White into my Google search, and I was shocked that there were you know short blurbs and that there were animated GIFs of Chris Evans escorting by the arm Betty White up the steps at the People's Choice Awards last night. And apparently it turned, you know, Twitter upside down because everyone, you know, like I guess apparently Chris Evans has a lot of female fans, you know, who knew. And they were basically all swooning over the fact that he was acting chivalrous and polite to 93-year-old Betty White, who we all love, our favorite Golden Girl, or at least one of our favorites. And I was very, you know, I was surprised to see the Twitter reaction, the online reaction. But you know, it was a nice scene. What did you hear about this, Dirt?
No, this is the first I've heard of it.
No kidding.
All right, so what? She won an award and she couldn't make it up the steps?
No, what ended up happening was that. I guess I think Evans won an award for favorite action movie star, and he happened to be sitting like in the front row, and he was sitting near Betty White. And when she got up to you know accept her, it was like a TV Icon Award, I think. And you know, he basically put out his arm to help her up the steps, and somebody else took her other arm, you know, because you know it's not easy for a 93-year-old to get up those steps to accept an award. Yeah.
Okay, well, then,
not a
here
real
you go.
News story.
Here's the shot of them going up the steps. You can see it right there.
There you go. For all our viewers live.
Some other guy.
Yes.
Who I don't even know who the other guy is. nobody cares about that guy. Like, that guy doesn't take any credit. But.
Exactly. You know, it's just Captain America escorting Betty White up the steps. So.
With dark hair and a beard.
Yes.
Are you sure this isn't Steve Rogers? Or not Steve Rogers. U.S. Agent. What was his name?
That's right. John Walker.
Yeah, John Walker. You sure this isn't John Walker instead of Steve Rogers?
That's funny. Fairly certain it was Steve Rogers. But anyway, like I said, I was very I was surprised to see that this was on my Facebook page. And having not heard of it, like similar to you, I was kind of like, what? Plug it into Google and just see it all over the internet and just be very surprised by it.
I guess that's what I get for not watching the People's Choice Awards.
Exactly, same
here. I guess that'll teach me a lesson to not watch the People's Choice Awards.
Same here. So the next story we have is AKA Jessica Jones, speaking of Netflix, may not premiere in 2015. So I guess it's going to be pushed off. I think I read something about this. The Netflix schedule is going to be one of these shows a year. So they may be releasing the next Netflix Marvel show in 2016 as opposed to maybe later in 2015. So that's where this is going. I don't know if that's a good idea because I don't know if Out of Sight, Out of Mind is going to apply to this. What do you think, Dirt?
So like Daredevil would be ongoing next year. There would be season two of Daredevil, but then season one of this series?
I'm not 100%
sure. Or is it that Daredevil only gets one season?
I'm not 100% sure. It says here when there's an article that ran in USA Today yesterday. Apparently, let me see what the date is on this. Yes, yesterday, that discussed Netflix's partnership with Marvel, and it said that Netflix plans to release each Marvel series roughly a year apart from each other. So, yeah, it's kind of hard to hold on. No, because I hadn't read the article, so it's kind of a. This was news to me because this was posted. Like I said, I posted the previous story, so I was kind of out of the loop for anything that happened after that. Let's see.
How many shows do they have in the works? Four?
I believe four. And then a Defender series.
Huh.
I believe it's so four. It's 4 years.
It's going to take 4 years for all these shows to roll out?
I guess.
It seems like
it's too long.
A terrible idea. Yeah.
Seems like it's too long. So, I mean, maybe we'll get clarification over the next over the next few months as Daredevil approaches.
Well, unless the point is that her show is not the second show. Like, her show may be the last one to come out.
Right.
Or something along those lines.
That's definitely a possibility. So, but as I said, having not read this, and also I'd be willing to wager that they're going to clarify the release schedule the closer we get to Daredevil, because they want to tease what else is coming.
Yeah.
All right. Let's see here. The Arrow 2015 premiere trailer reveals Canary, Adam, and .. I don't know if I should spoil this.
Why not?
Oliver Rises. I forgot to ring the bell. So, I'm not a big fan. I don't watch Arrow.
Did Oliver fall?
Yeah, exactly. I don't... Rattle roll. So apparently Oliver is somewhere low, and apparently he is going to rise in the next half season. All right.
Wonder if he died or something.
I don't know. Yes.
Quote, air quotes, died.
Right, comic book died.
Right.
Right? So, yes, that must be what happened. But we will find out in the next half season of Arrow. Our next story is Stand By the speaking of Stand By Me, right? We were mentioning Stand By Me just before the show came on, but it's a different Stand By Me. This is Edward James Olmos, veteran actor, joins the cast of Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Now let's see what role he's going to be playing. Because I believe they did name a character, but I did not have time today to Google the name of this character to see what role he plays in the Marvel 616. So there is a character that he's playing named Robert Gonzalez.
So what is... James Edward Olmos have to do with Stand By Me?
If I recall correctly, not the movie, but I may be misremembering. There was a movie where I think the song, not the movie title, where the song had played a role in one of his movies. And for whatever reason, I associate him with the song as opposed to the movie with Will Wheaton and River Phoenix I forget the other kid.
Well, he was in a movie called Stand and Deliver.
Ah, maybe that's what I'm remembering. And just misremembering the entire thing.
Right.
It's old age.
No, there was a movie where four kids go to look at the dead body of James Edward Olmos.
There you go. Oh, that's funny. That's funny. All right. Let's see.
Who was that other kid? He was in Sliders, right?
Yes. Chris something. Now here's where Google kicks in.
It's
Hello, no, Jerry. IMDb. Jerry O'Connell, that's right.
There it is, Jerry O'Connell.
There it is. Will Wheaton, River Phoenix. We actually forgot Corey Feldman.
Oh, well.
We did forget Corey Feldman. That's funny. Jerry O'Connell, Corey Feldman, River Phoenix, and Will Wheaton. Oh, boy. Those are the good old days, huh? So, let's see here. There's going to be a release date announcement for Powers on PlayStation coming soon. That's a heck of a news story. It's like, oh, we're going to tell you when it's coming sometime soon. Let's see. Sony turned to Brian Michael Bendis for web shooter advice in Amazing Spider-Man. So this is a news story. Why? Because they wanted to talk to Bendis about the mechanical web shooters? Really?
Hmm. What about them?
Run and roll, yeah. George. Run and roll. I'm trying to skim this article as fast as I can. Oh, I guess what Sony and you know, Amy Pascal, who's now infamous for not being the nicest person in the world due to this, you know, after the Sony
hack the email leaks.
Releases, yeah. Exactly. So apparently, Amy Pascal's office, you know, people contacted Brian Michael Bendis, and they asked him, and no, she asked him actually, and asked. She looked at him and asked, organic web shooters or mechanical web shooters? And he said mechanical, and half the table of the people gathered there said, God damn it! So apparently he was the deciding vote, although he was unaware of this. So apparently half the room was for mechanical, half was for organic, and when he said mechanical, they went with mechanical for Amazing Spider-Man. So you know what? Good for you, Bendis.
I vote mechanical as well.
I vote for mechanical as well. So CES, the Consumer Electronics Show, is going on. I believe is going on as we speak, correct?
Yep.
So apparently they showed some Age of Ultron footage at CES. And I'm like, really? Just come on, people. At CES of all places? You know, when, you know, where, you know, all the tech people probably have are surreptitiously recording this somehow and putting it online.
I don't know. That's a pretty good place, considering they've got the, what is it, 120-inch
That's true.
Ultra 4K TV sets and that kind of stuff on display there. That's not a bad place to show off some footage.
Yeah, that's a good, I think you're right with that. I think you're right. Let's see, what else? Okay, there's a video there. I don't think we're going to be able to pull that up. You want to start with the comic book news, Dirt?
I don't have the sheet.
Okay, I'll keep going then.
I didn't pull it up. I was like, hey, you got it.
I'm just going to keep on going then. So, Charles Soule has a new creator-owned series for next year and big plans for Marvel. Could they include Daredevil?
Why would they? I don't get it.
The story is being reported by Bleeding Cool, so you know we need to believe what Bleeding Cool is reporting. Sarcasm.
Why would Mark Waid not do Daredevil anymore?
Well, it's already been announced, Dirt, that it's winding down, that his run on Daredevil is winding down. So
I just thought it was that, like, that run, that series, they're going to relaunch it with another number one just to get more people reading.
Possibly.
It, like
possibly.
Marvel likes to do.
They just did that. I'm back.
Yay! The roof is not on fire!
The roof is not on fire.
We don't need no water for real.
But on around the new year, Charles Soule had posted something on his blog talking about his current projects and teasing stuff to come in the new year, and there was one title that he was teasing where he was saying, you know, he's been a fan of this character for a long time, and that some of the greatest, you know, creators have worked on this title, which is what leads people, and plus with supposedly Mark Waid ending his run is what has people connecting the dots together. So,
I don't know. He could very easily be talking about Avengers or Spider-Man or something. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Right.
All right.
We shall see.
So, Tim, you missed us. I don't know if you were listening. You missed us talk about Chris Evans actually acting like Steve Rogers, escorting Betty White up the steps at the People's Choice Award last night.
No, I missed that.
That's funny. I was just joking about how I flipped on my Facebook page during lunch, and all of a sudden I see the story, and I'm like, what the heck is this? And I just Google search Chris Evans and Betty White, and apparently it's all over the internet.
Yeah.
So. But do you want to jump back in, or we're on the second story in the comics news?
I don't have it up. You go ahead.
All right, I'll keep going. So a Spider-Man fan is going to auction off his complete collection to buy a comic shop. Now, is his collection really worth that much? Seriously?
It depends on how many books.
That's true. That's true. Dirt, I have a question for you, and don't take this to think that I'm going to open up my own shop and try to compete with you. How many comics do you think a person needs from their personal collection to open up a comic book store to have like a decent back issue catalog?
I mean, honestly,
I mean,
a lot of it's going to depend on location. You know, obviously, right. Your rent and overhead, things like that, are going to make a big difference. But I think. You can say $200,000.
No, no,
$200,000.
Oh, okay. You need $200,000.
So,
yeah.
Yeah. So $200,000 is enough capital to get it going. So,
gotcha.
I mean, if you're going to sell off your entire collection, if you can get, you know, about $200,000, I mean, the people have a lot of comics. You know, if you can sell them on eBay or Brian's Toys or, you know, someplace that, you know, you do a big enough auction, you break them into enough units where, you know, you're selling more than a dollar a copy, whatever. And,
right.
You know, you got enough books. Yeah, you could make it happen. Although, I'm not sure. I didn't read the whole article, so I'm not sure if he's buying someone else's store?
Yes, he's buying he's buying an existing store.
Okay, yeah. Well, that's a little different. That's a little different because you're already established. You don't have to start everything from scratch. So then you don't need quite as much.
Gotcha. Yeah. All right. Well, my question was actually in terms of, you know, because my personal experience has been that a lot of comic book store entrepreneurs start the store with their own personal collection as the back issues.
Right.
And all I was asking was, so how many back issues do you think a store in today's market, how many does an entrepreneur need to start one? Forget capital, because I know you need a lot of capital.
Yeah. I don't know, because back issues is really... It's I don't want to say it's a dead market, mm-hmm. but it's not, you know, the business it was 20 years ago. So people are going to care more about stuff that came out in the last 12 months than they're going to care about stuff that came out 12 years ago.
Gotcha.
I mean, really, some fine collector pieces, you can go around to some of the cons and just buy a whole bunch of their 10 for a dollar box stuff and just, you know, just buy bulk stuff from the last couple of years.
And just create a back stock. I gotcha.
Yeah, I mean, if you could say 10 long boxes.
All right.
Or the back stock would be enough, I think.
Right. I'm not spoiling, you know, any ideas that I might be having about my own back issues, but anyway.
But see, like I said, though, selling back issues to do it, you have to do it just right. There's a lot of work to do that just right because generally speaking, if you're going to average out a whole bunch of books, mm-hmm. you're looking at nickel to 25 cents a piece.
Absolutely.
Per book.
Absolutely. You know, absolutely. I absolutely understand that. So next story is IDW and Hasbro give us Superion, Bruticus, and Menasor in Transformers Combiner Wars. Oh my God, this is straight out of my childhood. Are you serious?
This is the greatest thing ever.
That just sounds so awesome. The Combiner Wars.
The toys have already started to hit shelves.
No kidding.
If you go to a Toys R Us, you can already find some of them there.
Nice. Roddy Cat, welcome!
Greetings.
So you're getting to us right as we've entered the realm of comic book news.
Yeah, I see.
And we just did IDW and Hasbro give us Superion, Bruticus, and Menasor.
Yep.
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, I might have to start picking that book up again.
That is interesting. And what's funny is that, you know, as a kid, these were the Transformers that I always wanted but could never convince. I mean, listen, I couldn't convince my parents to get me most Transformers. But, you know, I always wanted these combiner ones because my rationale was, you put them all together and they make one bigger toy. Come right. on. Mm-hmm. You know? That logic apparently was not effective with my parents. So.
Well, yeah, because it's like, you have to buy, what, how many of these things to make that happen?
Exactly. What hurt my argument was that I had gotten a Voltron in a box way back when. I did have one, mm-hmm. a die-cast Voltron. And now I wish that that I had been able to hold on to it, because I see the latest one, the Toynami one, is like $200.
Yep. Huh.
But anyway... Yeah. God, we could talk about our childhood toys all night. So we should have like a special show on that, or we should do like columns. Hello, we have column ideas.
Yeah. Man, I wish because I remember when I saw this article, I was like, I wish I hadn't got rid of. Well, I was not asked to get rid of my too much of my Transformers, because I had a couple of them, and I was like, what was I thinking?
We were not asked to get rid of them, trust me.
Yeah, I know.
Okay, so we have a story here. Uncanny Avengers number 1 will reveal the identity of Quicksilver and Scarlet Witch's real father. It's a Maury Povich show!
You are not the father.
Yeah, that's what we need. We need an animated GIF of Magneto. You know, flying around dancing, and they can just put the Maury thing, you are not the father, across the bottom.
I feel like the internet will not fail us on that one.
Oh my goodness gracious. Alrighty. Warren Ellis teases new projects, sets a date for Injection. Not sure what that is. I guess a new title. And he also joins the writing team, or creates a writing team, on Captain Marvel. I know he's going to be guest writing or co-writing a few issues with Kelly Sue. Is that correct?
Yes.
There you go.
So Injection is a new book, and then he's got a TV series that he said he has project name for, but we don't know what exactly it is. With Cable, with Universal Cable. So outside of that, there's not really much to tell outside of the guest spot.
All right. Okay. Jeff Johns teases upcoming Mr. Miracle story, and the internet fell silent because nobody cared.
Yikes.
There's got to be fans of Mr. Miracle out there somewhere. One of my buddies from college was a Mr. Miracle guy, but come on, really?
I know nothing about him.
People who like Big Barda, and he was along with her?
Exactly. Exactly. It's a New Gods thing.
Yeah.
Alright, let's see what else we got. IDW Publishing acquires Top Shelf Productions. That was pretty big news.
Yeah, that's big news. See, you skipped over the Mr. Miracle story to jump in on the big news.
I think everyone gave their opinion on Mr. Miracle.
That's funny.
Or their thoughts.
Yeah.
Which wasn't really much, many.
Exactly. Thoughts. So, whatchamahoo's it? Has anyone read anything by Top Shelf lately?
I have not. Print
published by Top Shelf?
Maybe, but I wouldn't know. I mean, I don't remember.
They did the march. The Martin Luther King.
Oh.
That the congressman wrote?
Yeah.
There you go. I was about to, because I, for whatever reason, Top Shelf had recently come back into my, my recent memory. And I was trying to figure out what it was. So thanks for that. There you go. Published by John Lewis. That was March. There you go.
All right. Marvel launching Uncanny Inhumans comic by Death of Wolverine creative team. So this is probably another one of the books that Charles O was teasing in his look ahead at 2015 on his blog. So Uncanny Inhumans will follow Black Bolt and supposedly be a more street level book compared to the sort of expansive storyline that's going on in Inhuman.
Okay.
Comparison. And the first villain will be Kang the Conqueror.
Hmm.
Because it'll be a time travel story. Actually, it kind of makes sense because, you know, Kang does time travel, and then since the Inhumans have been around since almost the beginning of the Marvel Universe, there's a lot of, you know, stories that can be told, you know, going back into the past and looking at stuff, you know, way back then.
So basically, he gets tired of getting handed by the Avengers, so he pushes through the Inhumans, is what you're saying?
Possibly. Possibly. Kang, he's referring to Kang. So.
Yeah.
But what's interesting about this is that they're putting a pretty powerhouse team, you know, artist and writer, on the second Inhuman book. That's pretty cool. You know, talk about pushing, you know, talk about pushing these particular characters, right? Like creating a good base for some recognition ahead of the movie.
Yeah, and just wait till Black Bolt takes over for Daredevil.
You never know. That's not a bad idea. If they did a Black Bolt solo book, you know, in terms of, you know, guessing what Soul's, you know, secret project might be.
And let's see what else we got. There's a Mortal Kombat X comic that will reveal origins of Kotal. Who's this? Kotal Kahn? Devorah, other new characters.
Okay.
Eric Powell announces final book with the Goon in the title.
Goon.
Marvel and ESPN team up for comic-themed sports documentaries.
Ooh.
What? I don't even know anything about this, but it can't be terrible, can it? I mean, it can't be as bad as NFL Super Pro.
Well, I mean, it's kind of, I guess it makes sense, Marvel being a Disney property, as is ESPN, there's some synergy in that, because I think didn't those covers already come out? I can't remember. Because there was supposed to be some...
The first one did, the Amazing Spider-Man one came out, yeah.
Yeah, so it was bound to happen.
Gotta love corporate synergy.
Wait,
what is this? You can play X-Men, Batman Returns, and more video games for free? Thanks, Internet Archive. Please explain.
Yes, so the Internet Archive is what it says. It just takes stuff off the websites and what's and all. They have just put a whole influx of web-based and DOS-based, I think, games on their site that you can play through a web browser, if I'm not mistaken. And that includes some of the games that are listed here.
Wow.
So, and it's like a couple of thousand of them that they put up, but you know they just marked these for the comic angle.
Just another way to not do work while you're at work.
Yeah.
All right.
Good stuff, though.
All right, big news, big news. Did anyone read these? Did you guys take a look at all these 19 new Image comics announced at Image Expo today?
No.
Nope.
I did follow the Image Comics Twitter account, so I saw the majority of them that were announced. I don't know if it was 19, so maybe they had announcements that didn't make it to the big stage.
Well, these are just the ones that IGN had picked up on their site, and I think that's why I took that one, because I don't know if there's one that has all of them. There might be something on Image's site, but I didn't look there.
But during the announcements, there really wasn't any that made me go like, oh my God. The very last one they announced, the second comic from Brian K. Vaughan and Cliff Chang, just because I want to read something that Cliff Chang draws since I missed out on his Wonder Woman run. And I keep hearing good things about Brian K. Vaughan.
Yeah. I'm kind of curious about that Darwin Cook book. So,
I mean, there's some interesting stuff here, but
yeah.
I probably have to see a little bit more about them.
And finally, Brian Bendis and Sam Humphries held a Marvel live chat talking about Black Vortex, crossover event between the X-Men, all new X-Men and Guardians of the Galaxy, and Nova and Captain Marvel. I think Cyclops ties into it as well. And new Image Comics Humble Bundle is up for tons of number one issues.
That's a whatchamacallit, a digital comics shopping thing, right?
Right. It's basically you pay pretty much what you want, and you get a bunch of books or video games or whatever. And that's what kind of what Humble Bundle does. And part of the money goes to charity.
Oh wow!
So they have a little store where you can kind of do that stuff in, and they have like bundles every week for one thing or another.
Wow. Okay. I had no idea.
Mm-hmm. It just started today, so you haven't missed much.
Well, this one did, but yeah, they've been doing like book bundles for a while now, and wow. The books and video games mostly, but yeah.
Interesting. I'm gonna have to look into this. All right. Thanks for the news. Thanks for putting that in the news.
All right, so before we get on to the comic book reviews of the week, I want to remind you all about Busted Tees. This episode of the Comic Book Chronicles is sponsored by Busted Tees, your home for funny, awesome, cool t-shirts that will get your friends' attention. Eye-catching t-shirts like John McCain winter sweater, ho-ho-ho, yippee-ki-yay, every generation of bat suits, Lynx lawn care, cutting shrubs since 1986, Zangief's Gym, and much more on sale. To help keep our podcast free, order from Busted Tees by going to coldslitterpodcast.com. That's coldslitterpodcast.com. Then clicking on the Keep Our Podcast Free link. Click on the Busted Tees banner and then shop for awesome t-shirts. Busted Tees through coldslitterpodcast.com.
There you go. Keep paying them bills.
Keep paying them bills. All right, so anyone have a book they'd like to toss out for discussion first?
What did you guys read?
Should we hit the number ones first?
Yeah. It looks like at least three of us read Ant-Man number one.
Yeah. So Agent Carter, of course, debuted this week.
Oh, we missed that.
Who watched Agent Carter, by the way?
I did. I watched most of the it was a back-to-back episodes as a premiere, and I missed like the first 25 minutes of the first episode, so I kind of came in missing a lot of the setup, but I thought it was a pretty effective show. I thought that Haley Atwell is very convincing as a kick-ass agent. You know, more so. You know, she's very similar in that regard to Ming-Na Wen doing Agent May on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. It's like, all right, I'm convinced she can kick some butt.
Yeah.
You know,
I thought it got up to a lot better start than Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. did. So maybe they learned from previous attempts at TV. Of course, shorter season, so kind of have to get right to
the point.
Point. 24 instead of 24 episodes. But I enjoyed it. We got to meet Edwin Jarvis, who Tony Stark's AI Jarvis is, I guess, loosely based on.
Mm-hmm.
And Howard Stark was there. And we learned about the villainous organization, Leviathan.
Gotta love how Secret Wars is playing such a big role in the S.H.I.E.L.D. stuff right now, and Agent Carter too, you know?
Right.
It's all coming in.
Comicbook.com's been sort of hyping that up a lot, saying how basically like S.H.I.E.L.D., the whole S.H.I.E.L.D., at least this season definitely has been sort of following agents or Secret Warriors. So maybe Agent Carter as well.
Right, or at least playing off of it and establishing that, because you guys didn't read Secret Warriors, right? I remember we discussed this.
I read the first arc on Marvel Unlimited.
Okay.
I think I read a couple of issues, but I hadn't read hadn't finished the whole thing yet.
Right. I mean, it's been a while. It's been a number of years now since the series came out, but I do recall several flashback portions of the story, so it definitely plays right into it, kind of going back and telling, because basically Secret Warriors helped establish Leviathan as a counter to S.H.I.E.L.D. and as a counter to Hydra, as like a third a secret organization that's been working in the shadows for this entire time. So, it makes sense that they would use the Agent Carter as kind of a flashback to help establish that, and we'll see where that goes going forward. I wouldn't be surprised to see Leviathan play a role in maybe the next Cap movie or, somewhere else down the line.
So Leviathan was like the Russian...
Correct.
...equivalent of S.H.I.E.L.D. and Hydra and...
Correct.
At least I think that's what... that's what I read online.
That's right.
But, So at the end of the episode, we saw the teaser trailer for Ant-Man, which brings us to Ant-Man number one, which also comes out this week. So it follows the story, or it follows Scott Lang and, as for those who didn't read Avengers World, I think it was 17, his daughter is back alive.
Yes. That was kind of weird, but we talked about that. Go back and check that episode in the archives, people.
They don't spend any time explaining even her being dead, which I can understand. There's both of them being dead and alive again. They didn't want to bog new readers down in continuity.
Yeah, they kind of glance over at least his history just a little bit, in and out of the story.
I love Nick Spencer's witty satirical form of writing.
Yeah, it was kind of interesting.
It was a fun issue. I had I actually was pretty entertained, and there were some nice guest stars in this issue too.
Right.
Firmly entrenched in very recent Marvel history.
Yeah, it was like I kind of went into the book thinking, I was like, I'm not sure if I was going to like this or not, but then as I read forward, it's like, all right, I'm on board with this. This is pretty good.
Well, my notes, I'm trying to remember what I thought, initially, because I did actually jot down a couple of notes about this. As I said earlier, I firmly think this is a primer for the movie. I think this is going to be very much similar to how they depict Scott Lang in the upcoming movie. I think this is a pretty interesting take on the character, because I've never really thought of Ant-Man as sort of a lifetime loser, quote-unquote. Obviously, he doesn't see himself as that, but it becomes more apparent in this issue that that's something that he may have to face and try to get over, because this isn't how I last read him. The last time we saw Scott Lang was in the FF series, the Future Foundation series, where he and She-Hulk and now I'm forgetting who else was in that. The Darla something or other, the pop singer who was in the Thing armor, and Medusa were the substitute Fantastic Four, while the FF was in space. And I don't recall Scott Lang being portrayed like this, as kind of like kind of a lovable loser.
Well, this is kind of going back to, like, or at least the way I recall it, this is like when he was with the Avengers, the because he was kind of playing that role.
Okay.
Then, sort of, because like the only time I've seen him before that, he was kind of playing like this. It was like, yeah, I went to jail, yeah, I'm, you know, divorced and this and that, and other, and that kept propping up. It was like, all right, we get it.
Yeah.
But
I guess they had to reestablish that.
Yeah.
You know, but like I said before, I thought that guest stars, the guest appearances in this, really helped make this, you know, really helped make the story work. You know, especially seeing a superior foe of Spider-Man come in there too. I was like, oh, look at that.
So there is one part about this that was kind of amusing. So Tony Stark shows up in this.
Right.
And I found myself thinking, is he inverted or not? Because it just kind of seems like he's playing, I kind of didn't want to say the Robert Downey Jr. version, but let's just face it. That's kind of what they're going for now. But it's like either this was before he was inverted and they're just kind of playing off of that, or he was inverted and he's just being, like, you really couldn't tell if he was any different from what you think he would be right now.
I think the key is the white armor, the Mac armor.
Well, yeah. No,
if it's the Mac armor, like, he's inverted.
Yeah. And I saw that. It was like, well, okay. But, you know, his portrayal was like, didn't seem any different from any other recent times, so.
Gotcha. Well, I liked it. You know, all my quirky comments aside, I like the book. I'm on for the next issue.
Yeah. Agreed.
All right.
Oh, and by the way, I like the locale that they picked for the next issue. It's definitely not a common Marvel Comics locale.
Yeah, true.
I'm wondering if I'm going to enjoy this even more than Superior Foes.
I have a feeling it's going to be right up that alley, especially with Nick Spencer writing.
I bet you better hope it just lasts as long as Superior Foes.
And props to the artist, whose name escapes me right now.
Hold on.
I had never heard of the guy before, but his
art. Rosanis?
Yes.
Yeah.
Very good. Fit the tone very well. I like the colorist too.
Did he have to be in the suit the whole time?
Ramon Rosanis and Jordan Boyd is the colorist.
My highlight was him doing the job interview in the suit.
Yeah.
And doing the front and back cover resume.
That was a line meant for the slightly older generation, right?
Yes.
That's not going to mean a damn thing to you if you're like under like 15 or 16, you know? That's funny.
This podcast is being sponsored by MyComicShop.com. Come visit us at ColdSlitherPodcast.com and then click on the link through our front page to MyComicShop.com. Shop there and keep the podcast going free. And you'll get new releases of comic books delivered right to your door. MyComicShop.com through ColdSlitherPodcast.com. Do it today.
Hey y'all, do you love us? Do you want to keep listening to us for free?
Help keep the Good and Terrible Show free by including the Cold Slither Podcast Network in your online shopping routine.
Visit coldslitherpodcast.com, click the link, keep our podcast free by shopping at Amazon, and then buy all the stuff you want.
Everything you normally buy, you can purchase through our site, and Amazon will give us money so that we're able to keep the podcast free.
Help us help you.
We love you a little bit.
Just a little. A lot.
All right, what we got?
What else did you guys read? All right, so it looks like a bunch of you read Wolverine's number one. Tell me about Wolverine's number one.
It's terrible. Don't read it.
The art's not that good.
It was, well, the art was inconsistent, first of all, because they switched a couple times, but it really, in many places, it just looked so cartoony. It looked so out of place. It really didn't help to support the story. And you would think that with this being Wolverine's number one, they would do a little more to kind of flesh out the backstory so you understood more what was going on, and instead they just had that text page at the beginning and just hoped that that was enough to get you interested. And it really wasn't. And I got to the end. I won't say exactly what happens. I don't want to spoil it for people, but the only good thing about this book is what happens on the last couple pages. And that's the only thing that makes it worthwhile if they follow through with it. But, of course, it's Marvel. I doubt they will follow through with
it. Right. There's going to be a twist or a swerve. But do you think that this attempt at a weekly book is going to suffer from, you know, just the general ills that a weekly book has, which is like inconsistent art? You know, you always hear me joke about Batman Eternal. Whenever you see Fabok doing the art, you know something important is going to happen. You think it's going to be the same thing with this?
Yes.
Especially if it's bad. Gotcha. You know, the Earth 2 World's End is a weekly book, and that actually does really well in our store. That and Future's End both sell surprisingly well. I mean, they sell better than we expected.
Okay.
And the artwork does change on those, but the way that DC decided to do those two books, well, at least I know they do it in Future's End. I'm not sure on Earth 2. But on Future's End, the art changes with the characters, not randomly throughout the story.
Right.
So when you're reading part of it and it's following, you know, characters X and Y, it has one artist. And when you're looking at character Z, it has a different artist. So at least it's consistent within those parts of the story.
Right.
So it doesn't, it only changes because you're changing who you're looking at. So it works a little bit better. Whereas in this, it's just like you flip the page and now suddenly everybody looks a little different. And that's, you know, pretty jarring.
Gotcha.
And a lot of times I was just looking at this artwork and just wondering where the rest of the detail was. You know, it looked, not only did it not seem to really fit the story that they were telling, but it looked a lot of times like it was rushed. And that's a problem, you know, in and of itself. And with this being Wolverine's, they had, you know, a bunch of variant covers. They had the blank cover. That's like the new big thing to do with number
one.
Right,
the sketch cover, right.
Yeah, they push this as being a big deal. And once you sit down and read it, it's just like, this is not the book that's going to draw in new readers. Like, there are a lot of people that go, oh, look at this, Wolverines. I better look at that. And they pick it up on the shelf and they kind of flip through it and they go, eh, and they put it back.
Yuck, yuck, yuck. That's all I got to say.
And I will mention that Nick Bradshaw did do a couple of pages in the Avengers Time Runs Out Time Leap. He did the Sunspot and Cannonball portion of the story, which was, and it looked like his art was so much better in that. Like, I don't know if he had stepped up a notch or what, but I actually enjoyed his art there because I really wasn't a fan of his in Wolverine and the X-Men. And now it looks like his art went back to that same style again, to reiterate what Doug Dirt was saying. Maybe it was rushed.
Well, and also, when you're doing Sunspot and Cannonball, it can be a little goofy looking, and that doesn't really matter. But when you're doing Sabretooth, you know, Sabretooth is supposed to look big and menacing and mean and not like the Cowardly Lion with the haircut.
Yeah. That's funny. That's funny. All right. So let's enough beating up on Wolverine's number one. That's funny.
Oh, just for Death of Wolverine, the Weapon X program finale came out, which should have come out after, or should have come out before last week's, or whenever it came out, Logan's Legacy finale. So they came out of order, just to let people know. But the art was better than that.
Okay.
And should have read that before you read Wolverine's number one.
Well, and the other thing that I don't quite understand is that with Weapon X program and Logan's Legacy, they both put that Death of Wolverine banner across the top. Mm-hmm. But then if you look at Wolverine's number one, there's no Death of Wolverine banner across the top. And that, especially from a retailer point of view, that's an important thing to put on there. Because if it says Death of Wolverine on there, people are going to, you know, the casual fans that come in our store and look around, they're going to take a second look at it. But without it being on there, they're just going to, you know, pass it by.
Okay. All righty. Let's see. Hey, Dirt, I see that you also read Punisher number 14.
Indeed.
This was one of my surprises of the week. And it's actually a candidate for my Click of the Week pick. I've been converted. Let's put it that way. I've become much more of a fan of Edmondson's Punisher run as I've gotten a better sense of the story and how he's adapting to LA and what's been going on there and kind of the change of locales. It's very much, I'm getting over my bias of having the Punisher in New York because I associate putting the Punisher somewhere else with the Thomas Jane movie. You know what I mean?
Right. So, yeah, I can understand that.
So,
I was happy for the change.
So it took me a while to get over that. But I find myself actively enjoying this book. I had a great time reading this particular issue. Edmondson is doing a great job. Obviously, he's working with Mitch Gerards, doing a great job of kind of integrating what they were doing on the activity into how they're portraying the Punisher and the supporting characters, especially the Howling this updated version of the Howling Commandos and how they operate. And it's just become a very fun, very action-packed issue. I enjoyed this go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, just to throw in a cheap plug, we actually discussed the 14 issues of Punisher on my other comic podcast, Comaholics, which you can find at comaholics.com, part of the Pop Culture Network. And one of the things I noticed, I went back and I read through all 14 issues in one chunk, is that the last issue, in issue 13, we got the kind of history of the Howling Commandos.
Right.
And the last panel of issue 13 is actually the first scene in Punisher number 1, which was your introduction to the Howling Commandos, but they're only there for a couple pages before it shifts to Punisher.
Right.
So when you read number 1, you have this image of these people. Like, well, who are these people? Who
exactly.
cares? And then as it goes along, they get revealed, and you see how they work and how they're doing all this background, following him around and seeing who his contacts are and, you know, knowing everything about him. And then you get that flashback issue, which was, you know, to be fair, it was a filler issue last month, but it did what it needed to do to flesh out the rest of the Howling Commandos. But it was nice to see how Edmondson has taken this book and given it a big picture.
Definitely.
Like he started in spot A knowing that, you know, 10 issues, 12 issues, 15 issues, 20 issues down the line, he would be at point B. And he's allowed the story to just kind of play itself out. And so I was really impressed when I got to that point, going to the end of issue 13 and going, well, holy crap, that's the first scene from the first issue. He's now brought it back. Mm-hmm. Full circle as part of this bigger plan that he has. And that really made me feel a whole lot better about everything he's done as well. It makes me like it that much more.
Sure.
And this particular issue I thought was great because of the way that there are certain things you kind of take for granted about the Punisher, the fact that he's a loner. He doesn't really have a lot of friends. He has, you know, people that help him get the weapons and supplies that he needs, but not really people that he... cares about, and they played off of that. They played off the Howling Commandos and the idea that certain things work on certain people, certain plans. They're not going to work on Frank Castle because he doesn't think the same way as other people. There's so much stuff that have been peppered throughout the issues leading up to, you know, in this, which is essentially like the final battle. And then, of course, there's the twist at the end where it's not the final battle.
Right.
And I just loved the way everything has been structured and pulled along. So I really loved it. I thought it was great.
I thought the resolution of this, let's call it the penultimate battle, right? Mm-hmm. I thought the way this particular battle ended was remarkable. I was reading it. I was just like, oh, wow, that's actually something I don't think I've seen before. And I thought that was pretty I was like, that's fascinating. That actually works, you know?
Well, and it also, it ended, like, you felt like it was leading up to this ending. So you go, okay, now we're going to get closure. Now we're going to finish this off. This will be the end of this arc. He'll move on to something else. And then suddenly the ending comes and you realize you're not at the end. You're at the end of Empire Strikes Back.
Exactly.
Like, now, it's not that everything has worked itself out. Everything has now worked itself out in the worst possible way. And everybody, it seems, is in a unwinnable situation.
Right.
And so now I want to get the next issue just to know who's going to survive this.
Right. Because, so isn't it funny how we're kind of both following the same track in terms of reading this particular volume of Punisher and kind of getting involved in the story? Right. Yeah, because you've been reading it. You haven't been reading it from jump, so you had to go back and catch up, correct?
Well, I read the first couple issues and
same.
I wasn't a big fan of Electro being there.
And I think that's what threw me off as well.
Yeah, going back and looking at the big picture, now I kind of understand why they had to do it to kind of re-cement him as being, you know, this is still the 616, you know, whatever. But Electro's role made a lot more sense once you see that big picture. It doesn't feel as shoehorned as it did right at the beginning.
Well, what it is was, you know, what we all assumed, and I think it was definitely part of the plan, was that they wanted to give Electro some exposure and give the Punisher some exposure because of Electro being in the Amazing Spidey 2 movie.
Right.
You know, and they them coming out roughly around the same time, and it was like, what the heck is Electro doing in this book? You know, why, you know, it's just another, you know, maybe we just sort of dismissed it as a cash grab or just as a fluky guest starring appearance so that, readers would see this and say, oh, I want to see where Electro is. I like them in The Amazing Spidey 2. I want to see where he is. Well, you can pick up this Punisher book. You know, that's, I think, what we all kind of assumed it was.
Yeah, and not only that, though, but it just, Punisher fights mafia leaders and drug dealers and the Yakuza, and to see basically a Spider-Man villain pop up in his book just kind of feels like,
A superpowered Spider-Man villain. Not necessarily, it could be other Spider-Man villains, but this particular Spider-Man villain, I agree.
Right. So that's why it kind of felt off. But again, once it plays itself out, you realize that Electro actually has a role to play that makes sense in the overall story. He's not just there as like, hey, we need a guy to take out the Punisher, go take out the Punisher. Because that's even not, you know, what he does. That's not really what he's there for.
Right.
And so, you know, seeing all this stuff play out was just so satisfying. And I had kind of given up on the book. And then the past, I think, they did the Black Widow crossover, and it made me kind of pay a little more attention to it. And then I started to realize, wait a minute, I'm seeing some of the names that I remember from early on in the series. So I actually went back and bought all the issues to, you know, get the whole run of it. Mm-hmm. It's now on my pull list. This is one that I'm getting in print every month to put into my collection because I've just enjoyed it so much.
Right. It's funny. I've pretty much traveled the same exact path with this book. I think I started paying more attention to it right around the Black Widow crossover, but I didn't really understand why he was in prison in Mexico, and that kind of threw me off for a little bit. But then but his eventual return to LA and to America is pretty much what got me interested again in the book and say, look, he's finally back in the States. He's finally back to confront this gang that he had been tussling with earlier in the book. Let me see what happens there. And then those issues are what really sold me on picking this book up. So you know, it's very similar. You know, our experience with the series so far.
And I also love his new face mask.
Yes.
Ski mask thing.
Yes, I'm glad that you mentioned that. I thought that was a great touch.
And it makes sense with the character like his. You know, his costume. He even mentions it a couple times throughout the run of the series. He's like, I just need basically SWAT team body armor and a can of white spray paint.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and he just spray paints the skull on there, and he throws that mask on, and that's his idea of being this costume.
Right.
But it really makes sense.
Unfortunately, very, very much Thomas Jane Punisher, but anyway.
But it works.
Yeah.
It works. They've made it work. So I'm very happy with it, yeah.
Yeah, unbelievable, right? It's a pleasant surprise.
Y'all have me wanting to go back and get caught up now.
I know, right? You listen to us go back and forth. It's pretty funny.
Well, I'll at least check out this issue and see if I'll continue from there.
The only drawback is that the artist, Gerards,
right,
however you pronounce his name, because of his work on the activity, he does drop out for an issue here or there as he tries to finish up the activity work. Mm-hmm. And so you do have a fill-in artist or, halfway through one of the issues, there's like four or five pages done by another artist that just, finish off the book or whatever. So that's the one downfall to the series, is that the art isn't consistent all the way through, because I think if it was, this would, make it much more of a slam dunk. That there, unfortunately, there are a couple times when you pick it up and you flip it open and it's not quite what you expect because it's a different artist. And you're like, oh man, that's too bad. But otherwise, it's great.
Right, and it's not as striking as it is on some of those weekly books that we were just talking about. You know, in terms of the difference in art styles. So,
well, it's just when they get someone to do a fill-in, it's someone who has more of just a regular comic book style.
Right.
Whereas Mitch Gerards has this, I don't even know how to describe it, but he does a lot where he draws in these like computer-generated colors on top of his artwork. So,
right,
for instance, if there's an explosion, he doesn't draw an explosion. He draws the scene, and then he goes back with computer-generated colors and creates the cloud of fire and ash,
right,
and smoke, coming out of it on top of it. And it's really a great style. It's an amazing thing to look at. And then you'll open the next book, and it's someone with just, your standard kind of comic book art style,
right,
filling in for an issue. And then,
right,
you just, you know, it's
right,
a little deflating.
What I was going to say is no spoilers here. I really love the heads up displays,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
that are on the
Howling Commando weapons.
Yeah, I'm like, wow, yeah, that's actually really cool. So, but anyway, enough of us, rambling. Waxing poetic on the Punisher. Punisher 14, definitely a candidate for my click of the week. Sounds like it might be. For
and again, if you'd like to hear more about the Punisher, make sure you check out the Comaholics podcast at comaholics.com, part of the Pop Culture Network.
Yes,
there you go.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
What's next?
What you got, Rodney?
I'm just a living weapon, number 8.
Yes, yes, awesome.
Yes. I guess it has been a while since this book has been
out, yes.
Yeah, so it's been out. So it took a second to kind of get to recognizing where we were at it. But apparently, Danny's got some new, as of the beginning of it, has some armor or some,
right,
kind of steampunkish looking armor that apparently he ended up taking a trip.
Right.
To find someone.
I was going to say, just to fill in a little bit, and we're not really, sure, spoiling anything at this point because the previous issue was out a number of months ago.
Sure.
So Danny Rand, the Iron Fist, has been broken.
Yes.
You know, his fists literally have been broken. So that's where the steampunk gear has come in to kind of enhance his capabilities at this point, because he is a broken man who is unable to do kung fu the way he normally would, because numerous body parts are kind of screwed up. So
yeah, he can't make the, he basically can't control the Iron Fist anymore. He doesn't. He can't do it anymore. Or one of the two. Yeah, because right. Because I remember last issue he was trying to, and was like, well, I can't do it. So he went on a journey to kind of to fix that, and that's where this armor went in.
Right.
To which we see the journey that he took into hell, or a version of hell.
Exactly.
As it were, to find someone and his internal monologue therein. It was a pretty good read. Some of the art is still a little bit busy. I mean,
it's what I was going to say is it's always on the harder to decipher side.
Right. In certain spots. But it's nicely detailed and it's colored nice, great and all. And it looks great. It's just that there are certain spots to where it's just like, it's a little too busy up in here.
Right. It's just hard to figure out what exactly is going on. But then there's also panels and pages that are just so beautifully rendered and you just can't, you know, you can't take your eyes off them for a while. You just sort of stare and kind of, you know, marvel at the detail and marvel at the design. And, you know, to me, there's more than a few pages here. Some of the fight choreography, you know, there's a scene where Iron Fist, you know, does the whole sword grabbing thing, but not with his hands, but with his feet. And I was like, wow, that was just really well done.
Right. All the while he's got dude in a chokehold or whatever. It's like, how is he doing that like that? But okay, sure. It's
right. Exactly. It's, well, you know what, Kari Andrews, you go. You know.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, and then when we get to the ending of the story, you know, we're not really spoiling anything here, since we were talking about Danny Rand being broken, and I guess this is another version of the breaking them down to rebuild them stronger and better.
Yeah. Danny gets his groove back. Let's say.
Exactly. Yeah, we'll put it that way. The final page. That's like poster material.
Yeah, I did enjoy that. In fact,
I think that was poster material. I love Kari Andrews' homage. It's a reverse Bruce Lee Game of Death suit, right?
I'll go with that. Yeah.
It's the reverse.
Yeah.
And I like that look.
Yeah, it's pretty styling. I kind of liked it too, with the because it got the three-section stash.
I'm looking forward to. Yeah, I am looking forward to this look being the look going forward.
Yeah. I will say that I'm surprised this series is still taking place.
Why? Because I believe it's a. I think it's a limited series. I'm not 100%.
I could have sworn it was a limited series too, but isn't it? What issue is this?
Eight.
I can still get 12.
Yeah. But it does kind of seem that way. I didn't think it was, but I guess that would make sense. It does kind of seem like it's got a story, and that's pretty much where it's not going to go farther than that. Because I was, in the midst of reading this book, I was thinking, like, this seems like it's going to wrap up in a few, so I wonder where this is going to go after that if they choose to.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah. And if you don't remember what the Game of Death costume looks like, look, you know, Google it, and then you'll be like, yes, that is exactly what that is. It's reverse Game of Death. That's funny. But yeah, no, this is another sleeper candidate for click of the week for me. I had a great time reading this book.
Yep, I agree.
Okay.
I can tell you what I did not have a great time reading this week. I did not have a great time reading Bucky Barnes Winter Soldier number 3. This was all sorts of weird, some strange outer space hijinks with Daisy Johnson and Bucky Barnes and going to kill some aliens and, you know, just in one quick note, I think Aless Cote is trying so very hard to do space the way Jim Steranko might do space in today's in today's day and age. So you know, he's trying so hard, but it's just throwing me off. I'm not 100% sure why I should keep reading this book. I love the character. I love the Winter Soldier, what they've done, you know, bringing him to prominence. But I don't think this is the right direction for the character. I think he should be a little bit more grounded, you know, in reality, in on Earth. But, you know, it's... You know, it is obviously a twist on the character, putting him in space, putting him in a a reality, or at least on a stage that he's not familiar with, that we're not familiar seeing him in, and seeing how he adapts. Yes, that is a mechanism, an engine for storytelling, but I'm not comfortable with it, and I don't know how much longer I'm going to stay on. It's very disappointing. Although the art in this issue, I know that some people had real problems with the art in the first issue and the first and the second issue. This one's a little bit easier to make out. I think the design in this is actually pretty, is pretty cool. The page design, the panel layout.
I go back and forth on this book, because at least from his Marvel work, it seems like most of the stuff Cott does, I'm not a fan of. Mm-hmm. Not saying it's not good, it's just not for me. But then I also want to try to give this book a chance. And like I read issue one, I skipped issue two, because this is issue four, right?
No,
this three. Is three. Oh, mm-hmm. I guess I did read one and two then.
I guess two was pretty forgettable.
Well, no, it looked, because I remember it was had to do with Loki, and it was like going back and forth between like different, I won't say time periods, but it was something funky happening.
Right, and trust me, there's still something funky happening in this issue, but it's a little bit easier to read in terms of the layout, and I remember that being a real big problem in the first issue, even the second issue. But it's a little bit easier to make out in this issue, going from panel to panel. So, like I said, I'm not 100% sure I'm going to stay on this, but, it's going to be a tough slog. For academic purposes only, maybe. We'll see. I don't know if it's going to stay on.
Maybe I'll swap Punisher in for this.
That's probably a good idea.
Let me get a book out the way. What did I read?
You want to do Amazing 12?
Yeah, that'll be it for
the book. Let's do Amazing Spider-Man number 12.
Okay, first I want to say I don't see why everyone was...
Wait.
I'm not going to spoil... Try not to spoil too much what happened. But I kept seeing stuff on the internet like, oh, the internet's going to break after reading this issue, blah, blah, blah. And... I read it. I mean, I guess I could see why people would be upset, but I mean,
I'm not upset. I don't think they'd be upset.
I saw people like upset or disappointed.
Really?
Yeah.
I was pleasantly surprised. You could be shocked.
It's alternate. You're dealing with alternate Earths. Yeah. So what's the big deal?
And to be fair, it really doesn't take people that much to get upset on the internet. So that's not saying much.
This is true.
Yep. Yeah. So I was very disappointed in Leopardon and Leopardon's performance in this issue. The robot. The kind of Voltron-ish robot, or
had it been introduced before, or was that wasn't the robot from one of the Edge of Spider-Verse issues?
No,
was it?
No. That was another version of Spider-Man, but I don't know if where this had been introduced before, but I was very disappointed that the giant robot wasn't all that impressive.
Went down pretty easily.
Yeah, I was pretty disappointed by that.
I do like the look-ins to all the tie-in books, like Spider-Man 2099 and Spider-Woman. They ain't looking into Scarlet. What's going on with the Scarlet Spiders there?
Really? Oh, I didn't even notice that.
I'm pretty sure they didn't.
Didn't even notice that. So this is obviously from Spider. There's a look in on Spider Woman. There's a look into.
My only disappointment was that Oliver couldn't do the art in all of them.
Gotcha. Yeah, but Colin Coley's not bad. He did a pretty good job on this.
Yeah, this actually was a pretty good one for him. It would have been more special though with Corpil.
Okay.
What is this picture that Dirt has up?
This is the IN variant. This is the unknown variant that showed up in everybody's order sheets 2 months ago, whatever. And then last month they finally revealed that the invariant is for the national championship Monday, January 12th on ESPN. So this is supposed, somehow, this cover symbolizes the college football tournament that's going to be on ESPN.
I mean, sure. Roll Tide. You know, I don't know.
And they put an ad for this ESPN football tournament basically on the bottom of this variant.
My God. Corporate synergy, people. Where's the cash register?
You do it.
My God.
The only reason why we sold this variant was because we were sold out of the regular copies, because everybody found out what the spoiler was at the end of the issue, and one guy came in looking for it, and I said, no, we sold out, but we have this thing. And he was like, ah, fine, I just want to read it. So he went and bought this variant. It's the only reason why it sold. Nobody has come into our store going, hey, do you have that college football national championship tournament variant cover that advertises ESPN? Not one single person looking for it.
There were other variants for this issue, right? Or no?
Oh, yeah, they always do like a 1 in 25, a 1 in 50, a 1 in 100.
Okay.
I mean, that's just kind of like a standard. But this was their super special variant for ESPN.
Gotcha. I mean, as a cover, it's not a terrible looking one, I guess.
No, no. I mean, it's not a bad cover, but I mean,
what the hell's the point?
Football tournament? I mean, what?
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm with you.
I mean, what does in mean? That you're in as opposed to out? What? Really?
You're in the tournament?
You're in the game. Yay, sports.
No. Oh, jeez.
Is that how it goes?
That's in the game. Yeah, it's in the game. Sure.
My goodness.
Because what happened was somebody said, are we really doing football variants? And they said, yeah, we're going to do that. So Disney told us we had to. Well, then what am I going to put on it? And they
Super
said,
Pro!
They said, just put something in there. And they said, in there? Okay, in. There. Done.
Goodness gracious, man.
They could have gone back to the 80s and gotten like sports stars, but I guess they couldn't. They would have had to get the rights to those people. So.
That's funny.
For the two or three people who know what Sports Stars is.
Goodness gracious.
They missed an opportunity to just put the Super Bowl shuffle and just have this long line of covers that I'll piece together to show everybody in the room.
Yeah. Couldn't get the cold cuts today.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, man, the inky shuffle. Yeah. You know what? I would probably buy that one. If it had that lenticular animation, so you would move it left and right, and you could see him doing the icky shuffle on the cover. I would probably buy that.
Oh, cuts today. Oh, poor ladies. That's me.
Hey, who has the rights to Sports Billy?
Oh no, I'm sorry, guys. Anyway.
Anybody get that Sports Billy reference, please at me.
No, I'm sorry, dude. You lost me on that one.
Oh, jeez.
You lost me on that one.
Eclectic's out there like, yes! Somebody finally has talked about Sports Billy. Anyway.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, boy.
What else?
We got through most of my books. I don't know if you want to get to whatchamacallit, quick rapid reviews.
Yeah, I got.
I think third and.
Well, wait. We got some books. More.
Okay.
We got some books at the other end here. We can go over.
Go for it.
Green Arrow. Green Arrow did the Green Lantern crossover, so we get to see Arrow and Lantern together in the New 52.
Okay.
And I've not been completely happy with the direction the book has taken when the writers from the show of Arrow have come on, just because they have a completely different storytelling sense than what came before in Green Arrow. But with this issue, I kind of feel like they redeemed themselves, because the interplay between Green Lantern and Green Arrow was so – it was such a great throwback to the Silver Age stories where the two of them were together. They had a great chemistry together. It's one of those things where I read this and it was so well done, it made me wonder if they wanted to do Green Lantern in the TV show and they just haven't been able to work out the rights to it or whatever.
Okay.
So this was their ability to get that story out that they wanted to tell, and it's just a lot of fun. Even if you're not reading Green Arrow regularly, if you're a fan of those old Silver Age team-ups between the two of them, it's worth just sitting down and reading through this issue just to get through the dialogue and the characterizations of it, because it was great.
Oh, man, I was going to use this as my jumping-off point.
Of Green Arrow?
Yeah.
Let's see. Detective Comics, they brought back Anarchy in the New 52, if you remember that character.
Yeah. Anarchy is back. This looked good. This issue looked good.
Yeah.
Tell us about it.
Well, these are the guys from Flash, who had left Flash right. And gone to Detective, disappeared for an arc. But even though the fill-in arc was great, they're back now on this. Anarchy is returning, and Anarchy, of course, his big thing is he wants to tear down society and let everybody be free, and free means, you can set fires and whatever. But the new version of Anarchy is firmly set in the modern era. So his idea of freedom and anarchy is to shut down the systems, wipe out everybody's identity. All your bills are gone because those computer systems are gone. Your history online is gone. Anything you've ever tweeted or posted on Facebook, it's all gone. Everybody's free to start over and be who they want to be. And everybody in Gotham wakes up to find these masks on their front doorstep that are just blank, pale, emotionless faces. And the idea is that now you can take this mask and, paint it to be whatever you want it to be and go out and be a new person and start a new identity, which, hey, great, let's start a new identity. But, of course, a bunch of people go, hey, great, I've got a mask now and nobody knows who I am, so I can go commit a bunch of crimes and there's nothing to stop me. Mm. And so anarchy, breeds that kind of chaos. And so, it's a great updating of the Anarchy character and how it would play out in the modern era. And so I just think they did a good job of structuring that story, putting it together.
Cool.
And it's not over yet. It's in the middle. So they got some going to do. Oh, also, one thing is that this month, here's the variant cover. This month is the Flash 75th anniversary.
Oh.
And so they have these Flash 75th variants. And so all the variant covers for the Flash 75th anniversary are a take on a classic cover redone with the Flash. So this is an old, I think it was a 50s, maybe 60s Batman cover with the Penguin, and Flash is running through it, knocking the Penguin off. There's Action Comics has a great one. If you remember the Neil Adams cover of Superman breaking the kryptonite chains, here you have Flash with a hacksaw speeding through. He's the one that actually cut the chains for Superman. This is one of those covers that I want to buy and own just because of the original cover.
Mm-hmm.
To have this variant on, there's a lot of fun. But they'll be doing that all this month on the big DC books. We'll all have one of those Flash variant covers. The other thing I want to mention real quick from DC with Future's End, Batman previously had been kidnapped. He's been experimented on by Brother Eye, and he and Joker are now fused together in this cybernetic body. Hmm. And so a new Batman has appeared, which probably Tim Drake. And he's following Batman Beyond around, and Batman Beyond starts making out with his girlfriend on this rooftop, and there's just this creepy shot of Batman with binoculars a couple rooftops away just peeping on him. So if for no other reason, flip through New 52 Futures End 36 just to see Peeping Tom Batman the pervert. Because that alone is just worth the price of admission on this book.
That's funny. All right. I've got a couple books just to throw out there real quick. X-Men number 23?
Yes.
Did you read this?
I just came through it a little bit ago, yeah.
Okay. So this is the first issue of G. Willow Wilson's run on the all-female X-Men team book. And there's a complete, I call it a complete tonal shift to the writing of the book. And you can tell, it's palpable. You know, there's just a different approach that she's taking with this team of characters. I like the story. It's a jumping on point for new readers. The art was a little quirky in a few spots, but all in all, I like the interactions between the characters. I like where Wilson is taking some of these characters, you know, coming off of some of the recent adventures in this book. Yes, we do get a cameo. We do get a cameo from a character we were just speaking about earlier. You missed the discussion about this particular character, Roddy. Mm. He happens to be I already spoiled that it's a he, but he happens to be to have a movie apparently coming out soon that we are all very skeptical of. But you know, I joke about dropping a Team X-Men book. This isn't one of them. I actually think that this is that Wilson might take this in a good direction.
Yeah, I'm gonna try to jump back on it again for this, at least this issue, and see.
Right. Yeah, no, it's not a bad place to jump on, I think.
Yeah, this kind of puts me in mind. She did a miniseries, a Vixen miniseries a few years ago that I picked up and never read. Kind of want to go back and check that out in tandem.
Okay.
Which I might end up doing. But I enjoyed the skimming of. I need to go back and actually read it full.
Right.
It seems like it's there's a good premise to the plot.
Right. I see no one read Angela Asgard's Assassin number 2.
It's on my list.
Okay.
So I guess we're already in quick clicks.
What's that?
So we're already in quicks.
Yeah, we're in a rapid fire review right now.
In that case.
You know what's funny about this is that I read the first one. I like where this is. You know, I like the premise, except, I'm still having trouble with the premise of how angels from heaven or heaven work in this particular, you know, in this book in the Marvel universe. You know, I put quotes around angels and heaven. And emphasize those quotes. What I find very, you know, it kind of takes you out of the story is that if you have to explain how the angel thing works about, you know, like giving, you know, like you can't just take, you have to give and take. If you have to explain that system in every issue, doesn't that make it, you know, doesn't that mean that it just makes no sense and it's difficult to explain and you should just do away with it at some point? Maybe that's what's going to happen eventually, but you know, it's been 2 issues of this. It was an entire limited series of this. It's just very, it's off-putting, to be perfectly honest. And it makes me, you know, just flip past it like I don't care. You know, I literally, you know, flip past it like I really don't care about this explanation. I just want to get back to the story. You know, and that's a full 2 pages wasted. Just, you know, flip. You know, I don't need to read this, you know? So other than that frustration, you know, I like that, you know, they're expanding on, they're at least trying to expand on the Thor universe, the Thor part of the Marvel universe, you know, and integrating Angela into that. I think it's actually a pretty creative way of doing it. So,
okay,
you know, I'm okay with that part. It's this whole premise about angels and heaven, quote unquote, that's just bothering me right now.
All right. But in that case, I got a couple of ones real quick. Fiction Squad number 4. This book is going to be wrapping up in 2 issues, and we still have Detective Frankie Mack and his sidekick Simple Simon still investigating whatever case they were investigating. If you don't know the premise of the world, this is set in a fairy tale land. There is a gang war in between the witches and the the queen, like, so the queen of the Sleeping Beauty queens and the witches, so like the Wicked Witch of the West, East, and blah 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 blah. We think the mayor's on the take. We don't know. Frankie is from a land where, you know, the of noir fiction, because every land there is pretty much a set. Like, so you have the fairy tales, you have the noir pulp fiction. So every land is a storybook type land. And he's just come over to the land of nursery rhymes because I think he got kicked out of his land or something. And he joined the police force here. So he's investigating the case. He had, as of last issue, Simple Simon put a tail on Humpty Dumpty's wife, which Simple Simon, being Simple Simon, actually pins a tail on her, which starts a riot in the middle of town.
Wow.
And
I love it.
Yeah, and the rival gangs just start taking out people while Frankie was off doing something else. And in this issue, they're starting to get to the bottom of what's going on. And it's just pretty much the investigation as is. There's not really much, you know, real crazy to happen outside of that. But it is a good read, and if you like the kind of aesthetic, the storybook stuff, you will enjoy it. Like, it's not too hard, and it's not too, it's real light because you see a lot of puns in it and whatnot, but it is a really good read. And that's, we have Shaft number 2.
You're damn right.
Damn right.
Shut your mouth.
We're talking about Shaft.
I can dig it.
Yeah. So here we have a young John Shaft before the movies. We find him 2 years after coming home from Vietnam, trying to figure out what to do. He, in this issue, gets hired on as a private investigator, but his first job is like he's a undercover shopper. So, but from that, he ended up finding a lady friend, falling in love, and falls into his very first case that would make the man that is Shaft, let's say.
Ah.
So here we are starting down his road down that. I am enjoying this book. It's only the second issue, but I'm enjoying it. Like, they don't lean too heavy into the black exploitation for us. But the tone of the whole of the book has been just really good. You know, they don't go one way or the other with it, and the art has been really nice. So, if you're a fan of the Shaft movies, give it a shot.
Cool. I like the first issue. I'm looking forward to reading this.
Yeah, I need to pull down the second issue.
And there's a variant cover by that I want to pick up, which I thought I was going to have a screen of. So I do want to pick that up if I can ever find it physically.
Okay. Cool. All right, let's see. Is there anything I wanted to talk about that I didn't have a chance to put on the list?
I want to jump to RoboCop real quick.
Okay.
What they've done in the series is basically a former black arms dealer who worked for OCP got out of jail, and he's been causing all sorts of havoc for the city. And basically, he stole a bunch of Ed 209s and did a bunch of upgrades to them so that they're faster, they have better AI, and they have much stronger guns. So in order to combat this, they've decided that they need to upgrade RoboCop. And what they've done is, you know, they've just kind of realized that, of course, when they made the original movie, developed the original character, technology was at a certain point, and they kind of fast-forwarded it, what they thought, you know, the future would be, and that's what became the technology of the original movie. Now that they've gone back to that original cinematic universe in order to create this series, they've decided that, you know, now that we're in the future, we can kind of look at where technology is now and, you know, backdate it to the time period of this book. So they've figured out that, you know, you can make these polymers, that they're these lighter alloys that they can make. There are, you know, these different upgrades they can do. So they upgrade RoboCop, but the new technology of RoboCop, he still looks the same, but he now has the strength and agility of the character from the new movie.
Okay.
So now he can run, he can jump, he can kick. You know, he's no longer this, you know, slow as molasses.
Yeah.
Right. And so now that he is an actual, you know, fighting machine, he's going up against these updated Ed 209s. And so what you find out is that this black arms dealer is actually laying a trap. He's wanting all of this stuff to happen, because he wants a full-blown war in the streets of Detroit so that he can show off his latest upgrades. He can show these Ed-209s blowing stuff up, taking down buildings, just manhandling, a guy like RoboCop, because he's going to then turn around and sell him on the black market all over the world. So everything that we've seen so far in the series has been part of this plan to, bring chaos, bring war to the streets so that he can have, on the news every night, you see these big Ed-209s, just destroying everything that's right in front of them, because then he's going to turn around and go to China and be like, how many of these you want to buy? As part of his arms dealership, or, the jungles of Africa, or, wherever there's warlords and people who want this technology. So it's all, that it's been building, it's all been building as part of this plan. And so it's fun to see, the Peter Weller RoboCop. He he's hiding in a truck, in a delivery van, and someone opens the back door and he just kicks the guy's head clean off the guy's body. And so you just have this decapitated head flying through the air that he just basically soccer kicked across the street. And that's the level of violence from the original movies is carrying over into the series. It's, it's a lot of fun. If you're a fan of that original series, it's definitely a comic series that you want to check out.
Okay.
Is there a jetpack?
No. And there's no ninjas either.
Ah. No snow.
That's funny.
Clicks of the week.
Yeah. It is about that time.
Ant-Man number one.
Nice.
Same for me.
Yeah. I was pleasantly surprised by it.
No kidding.
It was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
See, I'm torn. I'm going to go with what we were waxing poetic on. I'm going to go with Punisher number 14.
And so am I.
Hey, look at that.
So we've got two books for four picks.
I don't think we've ever had a split like that before either.
Look at that.
Some good creators every week. Some good creators on those books.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Hey, real quick, I just noticed something. We were talking about that Spider-Man variant issue. And why there's a big N on it, I think I may have found the reason.
Okay.
If you're seeing my calendar, my camera right now on the video, I am holding up a Disney Infinity card, and as you can see, there's a big red IN in the middle of that. I don't think that's actually it, but that was kind of...
That's funny. I was like, nah. Well, you know,
hey, brand synergy. You know.
That's funny.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so here's what happened in the Marvel in Marvel headquarters. They said, hey, let's do these Disney Infinity covers just in time for the new video game. When's the video game coming out? It came out last week. Crap. Right. Quick. Find something else.
Yeah.
ESPN football tournament. Okay, makes sense. Go for it.
Yep, ship it.
I love it.
All right. So, The Punisher and Ant-Man, clicks of the week.
You gotta love it.
Want to thank everyone for tuning in tonight's Comic Book Chronicles.
Yay!
Make sure to follow us on our individual Twitter accounts. I'm at TimDogg98 and at TheClickNation. Dirt is at PCN_Dirt. And make sure to go to his website, popculturenetwork.com. Roddy Cat is at Roddy Cat and at News Nerds Need. And Agent 70 is at Agent_70. So with that, we'll be back next week, 9 p.m. Eastern Time, for another episode of Comic Chronicles. Make sure to tune into, or make sure to subscribe to youtube.com/TheClickNation to keep up with every new episode as they come out. And with that, we are the Comic Book Chronicles, and we are signing off.
Yay! Yeah.
It's Dr. Doom.